God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, let there be light. Because we believe we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. This could seem like a trick question, and I don't mean it that way. It's on the topic of God being a God of law and order, not chaos. So let's have a very simple civics test. How many presidents of the United States do we have at any one time? Wrong. No, with all due respect, you're wrong. I know we were brought up in the olden days, so don't hate us because we've got old-fashioned ideas. You know, we were just brought up in a different era where there was one president of the United States at one time. Let's do a little bit more on a civics test. And again, God is a God of order, not chaos. Who in our system of government runs the executive branch? In whom is that power vested? There is a single person, right? No, there isn't. No. It's not one president and it's not a single person running the executive. We do not have any chief executive. Now, the Supreme Court has a chief justice who's in charge. The House and Senate elect leaders who run things, a Speaker of the House and a Majority Leader of the Senate. And those are clear lines of delineation. They run those agencies, those branches of government. They're responsible for hiring and firing staff. They're responsible for creating their own rules, for their own paychecks. When it's the House and the Senate, their own retirement plans, their own ethics guidelines. They are solely responsible for that, the leaders. In the case of the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice runs that court, unquestionably and unimpeachably. In the case of the so-called president, we at various times have dictators who take on dictatorial powers, such as locking down key segments of our society to deal with a flu that our country paid the Chinese Communist Party-controlled lab in Wuhan to create. And then at other times, we have 678 presidents, all of them with majority control. Yes, I know that's mathematically impossible, but that's what we're facing. When there are 677 possible judicial seats in the country for federal circuit court judges, 677 of them, and their districts don't matter, that word means nothing. They don't have districts. They have a nation to run, and specifically, they have an executive branch to run. That is, when they disagree. These are not squabbles between the executive and the judicial. These are squabbles between the judicial and the judicial. These subservient courts that continue to pretend they have authority to control our nation. As they do this, they're waiting for their colleagues in the Supreme Court to come along and decide just how much power they have. That is a judicial on judicial decision making. The executive is not a part of this. It is absolutely clear if you look at the numbers. Nationwide injunctions by district courts, which should not occur, or we don't need district courts. I just asked you this question. Why do we have district courts if they actually create rulings for the nation? Why do they exist? Why not just have one court? Because they'd be too busy? We'll create 15 or 677 national courts. That's what they've done. So then why do we have a Supreme Court? If a district judge can issue a national ruling, why waste the money in a Supreme Court? We already have one. Oh, wait, no, the Supreme Court's the tiebreaker. Okay, then why do we have district courts making national decisions? If you look at nationwide injunctions against presidents, George W. Bush, 2001 to 2009, there were six. Barack Hussein Obama, there were 19. Trump, during his first term, there were 64. Biden, there were 14. Trump, in 6 weeks, there's 12 and counting. He's on a run rate to have somewhere around 400 of these. Now, in the case of figurehead Biden, I think four of those were related to him pretending he had the right to cancel college debt, which is impossible because the debt goes to someone else. No, it's three times. And three times he was told, you don't get to do that. And three times he said, I'm doing it anyway. How does a nation function with 678 presidents? Because that's what we have. John Roberts contends to be a Christian man. Christians have a duty to uphold law and order. He made a pledge for this. There's a pledge to this effect, that he would uphold the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. You know, one of the huge enemies of any country? Chaos. You know, one of the ways that nations fall? Judicial coups. That's one way that they fall. In regard to the actions President Trump is taking, these are executive branch actions. Now, incidentally, when President Trump decided to go bomb the Houthis, I would like it if he would have declared war and had the Congress vote on that. I like that. That's a check and balance, I think, is a good idea. We gave that up. No, over time, that's just eroded. We don't ever remember a time where we declare war. They just continue to say that this is part of Desert Storm. This is just an extension of Desert Storm. This is what happens when you do not pay attention to process and you do not value process. Have you read the decision or any of these decisions? One of them is particularly egregious. My friend Chris Bray went through this decision. This is the recent one where a judge, so-called, has decided that she runs the military. She has stepped in to say that it is not okay. They have to reinstate men who want you to be forced into calling them women. Men who may well believe they're women or may just simply want to destroy society or maybe spiritually captured, all the above. Do you know one of the things that she wrote in her decision? From the other side, or rather from the defense, crickets. In her decision, she wrote this. Today, however, our military is stronger and our nation is safer for the millions of so-called transgender people who serve. That's not true, and it's not defensible. The fact of the matter is this: we have had a military recruiting crisis in the United States. We could not fill the seats we needed, the spots we needed in our military, because people did not want to serve in the military because they'd seen what the military had become. And even if that's true, her opinion of this does not matter. Here's part of what she wrote, and Chris Bray again, he writes a Substack called Tell Me How This Ends. This is a judicial decision written in the language of a 14-year-old girl. The president has the power, indeed the obligation, to ensure military readiness. At times, however, leaders have used concern for military readiness to deny marginalized persons the privilege of serving. Fill in the blank is not fully capable and will hinder combat effectiveness. Fill in the blank will disrupt unit cohesion and so diminish military effectiveness. Allowing fill in the blank to serve will undermine training, make it impossible to recruit successfully and disrupt the military order. First minorities, then women in combat, then gays filled in the blank. Today, however, our military is stronger and our nation is safer for the millions of such blanks and other persons who serve. No, it's not. We don't win wars anymore. We have huge, huge unit cohesion problems, and the inclusion of critical race theory into the military didn't help. To tell every white male soldier they're the oppressor, that they're serving a nation that hates so-called people of color and so-called trans people, and it's a world's oppressor, that didn't help. Yes, we put women into the military, and I can see that they have a right to serve in the military. In special forces roles? No, they do not. because they cannot pass the qualification tests. And if anyone tells you they did, they're lying. The changes they made to make it seem as if women were able to pass the Army Ranger course, for instance. Here's some changes they made. The women got to choose their footwear. I've never served in the military. I was too weak of mind to do that. In the tiny little exposure I got to SEAL fit in Temecula, California, I didn't get to choose my footwear. No one did. There were a prescribed set of boots we had to buy. There was a prescribed pair of pants we had to wear. They even prescribed belts. They let us choose a little bit on the belts. In the military, you don't choose. You wear combat boots. But no, to get women through the Army Ranger course, they let them wear running shoes. Boots are heavy and cumbersome, and they engender blisters, and they prevent you from getting harmed to some degree that they can in battle. Running shoes don't do that. They changed the movement standards for women. And what you ended up with was elite forces made less elite, not because women are less, but because God designed them differently. On the unit cohesion front, that this judge is saying, this is why they can't do this, that there's that the military is stronger. It's not stronger. And furthermore, it doesn't matter. Is President Trump the commander-in-chief of the military? Yes. Can Pete Hegseth make decisions about who gets in? Yes. Is this something people can't change, such as their race? No. It's based upon a mental condition. It is a mental illness to be divorced from reality. And in this culture, it's been made a serious and dangerous mental illness, because if you're bringing people in under the illusion that men are women, why wouldn't you call them women? Why wouldn't you have them shower with women? Because you're buying the fiction that they're women. The judge in her decision actually uses the phrase crickets from defendants on this key question. The defendants can disagree, okay, but crickets on this? As Chris Bray points out, this judge writes like someone making a TikTok video. She refers to people coming unglued. The defendants have come unglued. And she's one of 679 presidents we have. And again, God is a God of law and order, not chaos. When one of these 679 presidents makes a decision, the other 678 get to cancel it, but that's not even true. Only President Trump's decisions can be canceled by district court judges. District court judges' decisions can be eventually affirmed or denied by one single body. Do you see the math problem? John Roberts, if I could speak directly to you, and I guess I'll use your honorific since I try to be a good Christian. Chief Justice Roberts, you are the constitutional crisis. You are. You have a big decision to make. Does the word district court mean anything? Or they are just all national courts? Does the power of the executive reside in a president or 677 of them? If this judge can decide that you have to allow men with a serious mental illness into the military, men who are in a state of psychosis, denying that they are men, can the military then be forced to admit sociopaths and psychopaths, different by degree, but not type? Can they be forced to admit people who are desperately, desperately suicidal? The answer, John, is yes. If you will not do your Christian duty, which is to uphold the Constitution as you pledge to God, and remember that God is not a God of chaos. We'll come back under Disciples View. appreciate you listening to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. And next segment, we'll get to some emails. We'll do tire babbling and then wrap the show up with a personal note. Had an opportunity to do a face-to-face interview with a father and daughter who are fighting against gender madness in a unique way. They're from Washington State, Bill and Sadie Sullivan. Bill is a veteran of our armed forces. He's a guy who's involved in politics in a lot of ways and fought against the COVID madness, etc. His daughter's in that generation that's watching people be affected by boys stealing trophies and scholarships and jobs and, in fact, the identity of women. They've pushed back with a civil rights complaint against the entire government of the separate country of Washington State in the persons of their ridiculously ill in the head boss of government schools, Chris Reichdahl, who I tell you with no reservation, I don't feel I risk bearing false witness here. He is a deeply perverted man. And Bob Ferguson, the most dangerous attorney general in the country now, the dictator of the separate country of Washington. They are going after the administration and those two individuals with this civil rights complaint, sending it to the Department of Justice, asking for relief. And this, of course, is on Title IX and what's being done to girls in that state. They continue to abuse girls in that state this way. I talked with Bill and Sadie Sullivan about this and this complaint. This is part of the conversation. I encourage you to watch it. It's at youtube.com/@the Todd Herman Show. And guys, appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Todd. It's great to see you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Sadie and Bill. I want to get, Sadie, to your story and what you've observed and what you've experienced. But let's start with Dad kind of framing up this lawsuit. I went and learned that your local media back there in Chelan County is stunned and amazed to find out that a guy can have more than one lane in life. They make a point every time they speak of you. He's a hydrologist by trade, because hydrologists aren't allowed to have opinions. So talk about the lawsuit a little bit and why you wanted to file it, and then we'll chat with Sadie.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, little point of clarification. It's a complaint, a Title IX complaint filed with the Office of Civil Rights of Federal Department of Education. And it's filed and drafted by the Washington Parents Network. And so Sadie and I are complainants on there. I am representing her, as are some other parents whose daughters have been harmed by the state's violations of federal law.
Got it. So complaint, not lawsuit. My bad. And what caused you to want to file this complaint, to be part of this complaint that the Washington Parents Network is doing?
Sure. It started about a year ago. So there's a very smart individual, David Spring, who's you know, just a very accomplished pro se litigator. He's a educator by trade.
Yeah.
But he's a patriot. And so he and I were talking last year, and he asked me to join a lawsuit that we were going to get seek an injunction against the Biden changes to Title IX, which would have codified in federal law biological boys participating in girls' sports and in girls' locker rooms, et cetera. And so we were going just about to make a stand against that. And it was taken care of before us, essentially, at the federal level. So the next step then is to stop this madness here within the state that's in clear defiance to federal law. And, you know, we feel like it's our obligation to stand up for women and girls around this state and put a stop to this.
Yep. And Sadie, you are a young woman, in fact, speaking to us from a swim meet, and hope you're doing well and enjoying that, and would love to hear the results. But you're in this generation that you've watched girls around you be affected by this. You to some degree are. But tell us what you see from your vantage point, because a lot of us are so old, we can't remember what it was like to be your age.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a multi-sport athlete. I mean, I used to play hockey. I did track. I'm not doing it this year, but I'm mostly focused on swimming, which is my main sport. And so obviously I spend a lot of time in the locker rooms. And just hearing these different stories of, obviously, the girls competing against the guys. Fortunately, I haven't had to go through that. But, I mean, I have at my school, I've ran into boys in the locker room. And it's just, it's like, it's not a great feeling. It's very surprising.
What is the feeling?
It's just, it's like almost like you're in shock. It's like, did I really just see that? Because it's not supposed to happen.
Yeah, and these are boys who don't take care to cover their bodies.
What was that?
Are they naked?
No.
Okay.
Fortunately, I had Praise to God. Deal with it. But Praise there God. Was in for this in or sorry, this case, it was actually a girl, but I was at a swim meet last year in California with my zones team, and there were rumors of a boy in the locker room changing into a swimsuit, and I guess girls like saw him with no clothes on and stuff like that. But it turned out it was a girl who had actually gone through surgeries, and she was transitioning to be a guy. And the story was she wasn't comfortable competing with the guys yet. So
somehow she figured like she didn't measure up, Todd. And they had removed her breasts, and they had constructed from her forearm some type of artificial penis.
Right. And that is an utterly, all these surgeries are utterly brutal. What's so fascinating to me is it's always the person who is either gender defiant or gender denying or truly struggling with gender, because they're not all the same thing, that it is always their comfort that matters. That this person with a fake penis wasn't comfortable being with the boys, so that person gets to make the girls uncomfortable, right? And there's been cases of abuse. We know this in the state of Virginia. There was a case where a boy who got to pretend to be gender fluid twice sexually assaulted girls. And a father was kicked out of a school board meeting, arrested, thrown to the ground by cops because he had the audacity to say, you're covering this up. There are people who say this stuff never happens, but Sadie, have you seen the same thing where it seems to be the people who are gender confused or defiant, that they're the ones that matter? Is that the way it is in Washington State, that it's always their concerns?
Yes, very much so. Actually, we complained to our school about these because it happened more than once. It happened about 3 or 4 times or even more, I think. There was multiple complaints from other girls at the school, and the school's response was basically telling us to, we can't do anything about it. You guys are more than welcome to use the faculty bathroom, which we do not actually have access to, or just figure something out on our own.
Something out on your own as to where to relieve yourselves. If you don't have access to the faculty bathroom, they're pretending you can use. And what is the state of mind of kids who know this is wrong, but are afraid to speak out? Like, what's that like for them? Because I got to imagine there's whispering where your friends are going, hey, Sadie, I'm glad you and your dad are doing this. I'm glad for Washington Parents Network. But what's it like in those conversations where there's girls who just are afraid?
Well, it feels like an underground society, I guess. I mean, there's girls that are completely, I know one of my closest friends is completely against it. And she won't speak up and she won't say anything. And I mean, to me, it seems so easy just to go and report and report and report so we can get some sort of action, hopefully.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's amazing to me.
Bill, you probably raised your daughter the same way I did. If someone touches you in a way that makes you uncomfortable, you come and tell me. If there is a boy or a man making you uncomfortable, you come and tell me. And so as a father, like, how do you deal with other fathers who are silent in the face of this? I deeply dislike and try not to hate, because as a Christian man, I'm supposed to love my enemies. The people who are driving these ideologies are evil. The people who are silent in the face of this, like, how do you deal with other dads who just shut their mouths and pretend they don't see the bad man in the locker room?
Yeah. They've turned in their man card. The problem is, we were talking earlier about my political activity or whatever at the local level. Yeah. It's not unidimensional. There's multiple things. Cause if I see an injustice, especially as it pertains to children, I'm obligated as a capable man to do something about that. That's my charge. And I don't understand people that wouldn't do that. I don't have a lot of respect for people who wouldn't do that. But we saw that during COVID. The entire medical industry just laid back and watched the entire medical industry get turned upside down. Military leadership sat back while we destroyed hundreds of thousands of troops, the health and lives for them. And so it's just endemic. I don't know why there's so few people that will step up. I'm just a dad that's had enough. I'm a dad that's like, like John Rambo in First Blood, right? Where he went berserk and ran off in the woods and, yeah. You know, but instead of coming and shooting up the town, I'm wanting to make change, you know, through policy and holding local politicians accountable. And so that's what we're doing. And I look at my kids, I look at every kid with just this, just a love and a sense of protection. And I don't know how every man doesn't feel that way, Todd.
Yeah, I totally agree. And with this complaint and the civil rights complaint, what is the mechanism of hope? I mean, what can happen since it's not a lawsuit? What can be the ultimate relief here?
Well, personally, I don't think it's a matter of hope. It's going to happen. Okay, the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution guarantees that federal law trumps state law where there's a constitutional conflict.
Yeah.
And so, the states can enhance a civil right, but they can't take one away. And here they are clearly taking away civil rights of girls. Title IX was established to codify fair treatment for girls and women in sports and academics. And that fair treatment includes separate locker rooms, separate bathrooms, separate sport leagues, maintenance of their reasonable expectation of privacy. So clearly the state of Washington's is in violation. This is a state policy that's been adopted by every district in the state that has to allow people into the locker room as they identify by gender. And so there's no litmus test, there's no criteria, there's no checking of their credentials to allow them. It's just whoever feels like coming into the boys' locker room or girls' locker room will do that. There are predators out there. There are 17 and 18 year old men in high school that are seniors. There are, teenage boys can be predators. You mentioned the Loudoun County, Virginia case. There was multiple rapes involved in that. There's in Canada, there's a 50 year old man who identifies as a young swimmer like my daughter and swims and changes in the locker room with girls as young as 8 years old. There's, in Washington policy, it allows transgender my biological boys to go on overnight trips and stay, with girls. So my daughter goes to state, she stays with a couple girls or one other girl in a hotel room. Well, what if that one girl is a trans, a biological male? What could go wrong,
Gosh, one could only guess what might go wrong. Washington State is the most extreme on all this stuff. There is no parental rights in regard to medicalization at the age of 13, et cetera. We know this. Sadie, when girls are put into a position of competing against boys, there are many of us, I've said this, that the girls should just not go stand in the medal stand. If that boy steals a gold medal, the girls should turn their backs, take some form of physical protest, or just say, hey, we're out. There were some volleyball teams that did this year. There's a man pretending to be a woman on a really good volleyball team. And hey, imagine that. Their star player is a man. And there were sports, there were teams that refused to compete. Do you think girls should take that stance if they're forced to compete against a boy or a man? I mean, how should they respond in the face of that?
I think, honestly, it's a form of compliance, in my opinion. I think putting yourself out there, knowing that you're probably not going to win it, at least you're out there, you're trying, you're competing. I could never back down because there's girls like me that are super competitive. They're super competitive.
Yeah. I'm
and I've worked this hard to get to where I am right now. And I don't want to have to go and not do that just because I'm probably not going to win or someone else is going to take it from me. Because I think, honestly, it's better if you go out there, you give it your all, and the image is out there because you have the image of the guy winning against you and you're out there. But at least you tried.
I think that's a great thing, and I'm laughing and smiling because I love the fight in you. I love it. It's a great answer. What about this? What about on the medal stands that if a boy succeeds in stealing the gold medal, that the second place girl put one finger up and the third place girl put two fingers up? Just a simple sign, just like this, just really quietly like this. What about something like that just to say, hey, we all know. We were first and second. Would that be a cool idea?
Yeah, I think that would be a great idea. I mean, I think the right approach to all of that is to remain humble. I mean, you don't want to make a big loud scene. It's just not going to work. And so I think doing something like that would be perfect.
Yeah.
I think one of the best things we can do is, you know, show the photos. The photos speak for themselves. The guys are bigger, they're thicker, they're taller. You know, the one that's floating around the internet is from right here in Kashmir with Anna Lee Wilson at the AAU track meet. You know, that the guy standing next to her is 6 inches taller. His legs are twice as thicker, sir.
Yeah.
He's on the number one stand. She's on the number two.
Yep. Yep. And those images matter. Like, there's the very famous iconic image of that man playing basketball against girls, and he is, I don't know, 6'5" and like maybe 250. So when this all gets started, and I mean the complaint started, and this goes through now this process, are you concerned about what Bob Ferguson might try to do to you, Bill, or to Sadie?
Well, I know who I work for, and so I'm unintimidated. you know, we place our trust in God. And, you know, we're here to do his bidding and his will here on earth and best we can. And I know I'm on firm footing. I know that I'm doing the best I can with the tools that God has given me to fight. And so I am, regardless of consequence.
And that was a conversation with Bill and Sadie Sullivan. Bill, the father, Sadie, the daughter, both of them standing up against gender madness. And there you go, Attorney General Pam Bondi. You have a civil rights complaint. Let's see if you act on it. We'll come back under Disciples View. Appreciate you listening to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman, and previous to the just last interview we did with Bill and Sadie Sullivan, I forgot to ask, will you pray for them? Because when you're fighting against the gender madness, and when you're fighting against people like Chris Rakedal, the boss of government schools in the separate country of Washington, you are in a spiritual battle. And you are right in the center of what Satan's trying to do to people. We'll get to the Tower Babbling. We'll get to a personal note here in just a second. A couple of emails. This from Lieutenant Rick. I won't say what city he's in since he's allowed us to see that he's a police officer. Thank you for serving, and may you be safe. He wrote to comments@AFR.net. That's where you can write if you want the folks who manage AFR to see this. The program directors and managers, etc. I probably even get to the Wildman family. This email is for Todd Herman. I recently discovered AFR on local radio here in Southeast. And I won't say the state since I just said I was going to anonymize Rick to some degree, Lieutenant Rick. I downloaded the AFR app and have been listening to your show and others since I discovered. I truly enjoy your commentary, especially the personal note segment at the end of the show. Yesterday's segment about the young man asking you to take him to the father-son youth group event was touching, and it gives me hope for the youth of tomorrow. You're 100% right. We need to lead our young men to God if we are to flourish. Thank you for what you do and for helping me be a better husband, father, and better Christian. Gratefully and respectfully, Lieutenant Rick. Lieutenant, thank you very much for the note. And I'm so glad that God is making you a better Christian through you hearing about my mistakes. And I'm so glad that God called you to this network. And I'm so glad that God called you to be touched by that message. And what you do in protecting society and putting yourselves between us and the bad guys is vitally important to maintaining a decent society, even a godly society. And I would ask you this, Lieutenant, in your heart, is the Holy Spirit asking you to get involved with young men? And maybe you are. I'm going to bet you are. And if you're not, maybe that's why God had you enjoy that segment. Maybe that's why you came to AFR. Maybe that's why you found us. Is maybe it was that particular thing that God caused me to say that day through which God decided to touch you. Appreciate your note. Please, and I mean it, stay safe. And I so appreciate what you do, Lieutenant. From Dane, I usually listen to AFR when I'm traveling, which I do every week. I find time to listen to the podcast as well. Thank you. Overall, I love the format of the show and enjoy your insight into current events, either through your own investigation or from the Holy Spirit. I listened to the March 12th podcast of Will You Fall For It Again? Excellent information of how the sheep of America could be led astray once again. However, I wanted to comment on your personal note segment, and that particular day was in reference to, I'd pay anything to hear my dad. Thank you. I appreciate your vulnerability displayed to the citizens who listen to you. This particular day resonated with me because I lost my father at a very young age of 13. I have fond memories of him as well. And I think sharing your personal notes allow your crowd to connect more with who you are. Well done. Thank you for your show. May God continue to bless you. On a side note, is the music at the end of your show with the lyrics, Do You Love Me, part of a song or was it created for your show? Brother in Christ, Dane. So let me comment on the music real quick. That music is a song called Do You Love Me. It is created by my friend Matthew. To say friend is to undersell this. He is a brother. His family brought me to Christ. He is a brother. He is really my brother, my soul brother, in that way. We from eighth grade on, he and I have been the dearest of friends and have become brothers without reservation. That song is called Do You Love Me? It's from his album Punch and Beauty. He was doing that under a shortened name, Matt Bruno. Matt Bruno, Punch and Beauty. And that song, if you listen to the lyrics, is Jesus Christ talking to Peter. The song sounds like a love song. It's not. Well, it is. It's the love song. But it's not about men and women or boys and girls. It's about God asking Peter, do you love me? So the whole record, by the way, all of it, because Matthew does nothing that's not, well, that's not true. He's a man. He can fail. But the record is a pop record and a great one with God at the center of all of it. And in regard to you being touched by the personal note segment, just thank you for that. And I'd ask you the same thing. Is God seeking for you to do something in your life with young men? On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called the Tower of Babel.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents the Tower of Babbling.
It's not a criminal violation to enter the country illegally. It's not a criminal. It's a crime. It's not a crime.
Well, in fact, Jasmine Crockett, I hate to inform you of the truth, but it is a crime. First sad bite today from Don Lemon.
So you don't think you can be a sincere Black MAGA person?
I think there can be sincere Republicans.
But you can't be a sincere Black Republican?
I don't think that you can be a rational MAGA, be Black and be a rational MAGA person. I think you can be Black and be a Republican.
I think they would find that very insulting.
Well, I mean, the truth is often insulting.
You can't be rational and think that America's been left behind and that America should be made first by her president. That's clearly, clearly irrational. Don Lemon is, of course, the very picture of a rational human being, and he proved it when he talked about who should be the official leader of the Democrat Party. This is soundbite number two in today's Tower Babbling, also featuring Don Lemon, rational thinker.
People love AOC. People love Jasmine Crockett. People love Eric Swalwell and the like. And I think that the Democratic Party should put the people out there who the people want. They should put the politicians out there who the people want, who they're asking for, who are meeting the moment with the same energy that
they're not asking for AOC.
Yes, they are.
The people you party with.
I party with don't like AOC.
Oh, please.
No, they don't at all.
Well, most people don't.
Don Lemon, AOC and Jasmine Crockett represent exactly everything that lost your party the election. Exactly everything. Elitism and refusal to recognize biological reality, for instance. Last soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. We can't let them forget how they opened a legislative session in the separate country of California.
Let us pray. Raise your hands. Breathe in deep. Get yourself a new pair of boots, a shiny buckle, and a wide-brimmed hat. And sing praise as we enter the Cowboy Carter area.
Yes, in fact, that was Beyonce as a prayer. And that's a wrap for today's Tower Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
Whoa!
On a personal note right now, there's this saying about God's timing being perfect. And you cannot tell at the time. God always seems late. I don't think God ever seems early, does he? If God's going to do something for us, does he ever seem early? I guess in relation to people who felt they weren't ready to have kids, that might seem early. I don't know, this is a perfect time to have kids. Certainly married and stable is the goal, should be the limit that we do that when we're married. But God's timing is sometimes also mysterious, isn't it? My wife and I were reminiscing recently, and my wife is a very, very smart woman. She is, of all things, the keenest intellect. She shouldn't be who she is. She shouldn't be an accomplished teacher. She's just has such a challenging upbringing. She shouldn't be a college graduate, particularly not with honors. But she is. God gifted her with this fantastic intellect. And she and I were reminiscing about what's gone right and what's gone wrong. And she said something to me that was really interesting, that she was talking about this deliverance that I went through. And she said, you know, our daughter was kind of responsible for you doing that. And I kind of pridefully said, oh, you know, I was thinking of doing that anyway. And Robbie Walden, the pastor who did that for me, is a friend, and he's been on my show a bunch of times. And the more I thought about it, she's absolutely right. It was because my daughter asked me about deliverance. Do you know anything about deliverance? And I was visiting with her about that. And as I was visiting with her about it, I became convinced this is a thing I should do. It's also really remarkable because God will so often display his timing. And he'll do it in ways where when you look back, all the pieces come together. And you think, oh, okay, you are doing this thing you said you would do. So post-deliverance now, so I was chatting with my wife, and we were just thinking about what's gone well for us and what are the challenges. And she was really, once again, with that keen intellect, coming under and lifting up. That's what we're to do, right? Coming under and lifting up. And in bringing that to my attention, that really did key me into some things that have been happening, such as this deep desire I've had in my heart for a business I want to start. And it is relation to health and the human body. And God's given me this great zeal for this. And I had a way I wanted to do it, and that wasn't the right way. And God made that clear. That's not the right way. I simply decided it was not God's plan. It may not be still. But in the midst of this discussion, all of a sudden, I get a text from a friend. Hey, can we get together? I want to run a business opportunity by you. Sure. I would love to see you in general and just catch up in general, but sure. So we sit down. We catch up in general. We're brothers who hold each other to account. And it wasn't until afterwards where I was talking with my wife and she was coming under and lifting up. I realized, wait. That's the business. That's the business I've had in mind since I moved to Idaho. And I think what God is doing with me is saying, hey, we need to, if I'm going to trust you with something like this, I need the floor swept clean. I need the house swept clean. I'm not building anything in there. Well, it's a spiritual mess. God's timing is so interesting, isn't it? You know, with all the time I spent with my dad when he was in the hospital and he was dying, with all that time, I never did succeed in figuring out the right way to talk to him about the Lord. I didn't really know how to do that. I didn't know that my witness could be enough. I just didn't know. So I would talk to him about what I was doing in church. I would say to him things like, I think I might want to be a pastor. And I would say things like that to him. And I would say, hey, I'm praying for you. And my dad was very much a church is the woods guy. And my church is at the woods, and I talk to God alone. And I didn't know enough to say to him, well, Dad, is that how God designed church? Is that what Jesus said he wanted? I didn't know enough to say it that way. So here's my own father dying. And he gets further and further down the road to, this is not going to turn around. We kept trying. We were blessed with great doctors, and we kept trying. And he didn't want to die. He wanted to meet his grandbaby, his first grandbaby. And he never did get to do that. Sadly, never got to have that happen. And then one day, I go in, and my dad is wearing a pouch around his neck. Leather pouch, and it's spelled spicy and filled with herbs. And, hey, Dad, what is that? He goes, oh, this is a pouch that the chief of the Newport Indian tribe gave me. I've been honored by made an honorary member of the tribe, and I'm to wear this into death. This will guide me to the spirit world. So, you know, I want my body cremated. Please make sure this goes with me. Don't let them take it off of me. I need to wear it. Okay. Paganism. Now, that chief meant that in the most loving possible way. I've met him. He came to my dad's memorial. He is a very good man. I've come to learn about him that he is a practicing Christian who walks with the Lord Jesus, and he considers these things tradition, not sacrament, not idols, not a replacement for Jesus, but a tradition. My dad loved the native traditions. He loved the native people and his vision of them, and he idealized them. But the chief did something else. One day he brought a friend in to meet my dad. My dad had heard about this guy, but had never met him. And if I'd been there, I'd probably been concerned because chances are the guy smelled like weed, like pot. He was a cowboy, hippie, pot-smoking, Jesus-loving preacher who walked with the Lord Jesus and made disciples and didn't remain sober, and that was his flaw. But he was the man who got my father to accept the Lord Jesus Christ on his deathbed. God's timing. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Because we believe, we speak. Because he first loved us, we speak his word. We walk in the path of Jesus Christ to make disciples of all nations until God decides we can speak again together. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman. This has been Disciples View.